Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show. It's time for our legal segment. Joining us right now, he is one of Rhode Island's top attorneys. He's our legal expert. It is attorney Tim Dodd. And Tim, let's start off with this story. It was actually, I thought, kind of extraordinary that ICE put out a press release saying there was this Guatemalan illegal that was arrested. Providence Police, child molestation charges. They put a hold on him, but apparently the ACI let him out. They were able to then arrest him again. And this time they have him in ICE custody, and the story is evolving, where now you have Attorney General Peter Noronha sharing that his office actually went to court to try to fight this, and he's essentially pointing all fingers at Governor McKee. But people are wondering, how did something like this happen?
Well, you know, when something like this happens, the finger pointing starts. Everyone's looking to blame somebody else for what's clearly a series of unfortunate mistakes that have been made. You're right, John. This defendant was a Guatemalan national in our country illegally without permission. While in Rhode Island, he is arrested and charged with child molestation. And now the normal process begins. He is brought into court because of the nature of the child, child molestation. There's a bail hearing, and at that hearing, if the court is reasonably satisfied as to certain conditions, the court can determine that the defendant should be held without bail, released with personal recognizance, surety bail be posted, or some combination of everything. So the court has the hearing. And the court determines that the evidence and proof of guilt was evident, and the presumption of guilt was great. It's a very low standard in the law. The judge thereafter, instead of determining that this guy should be held without bail, which is what the AG recommended, the assistant AG who was handling the case argued that because of the nature of the charge, he was a danger to the community. And because of his status as being here illegally, that he was a flight risk. The judge, utilizing his or her discretion, set surety bail at $50,000, perhaps thinking that this guy would never make bail. However, he does make bail. He posts either the full amount or gets a bail bondsman, and boom, he gets out of jail. Now, that's where the disconnect begins. ICE had identified this guy and alerted the prison system that there was an ICE request for a detainer because of the fact that this guy was charged with this crime and he was known to be here illegally. Now, Rhode Island's a sanctuary state, and that has a lot of implications, which I think are unfortunate. He makes bail. The ACI releases him. Boom. Now he's on the street. Now he sort of doesn't show up for any more court appearances. And he's on the lam for, I think, a little over 10 months. He's now been picked up again by ICE. And now he's being held, I believe he's at the Wyatt Detention Center now.
Yes. Yep.
So Noronha, I think, is pretty well covered here because his the AG that he had do this hearing made the right request, made the correct argument, requested that this guy be held without bail. The judge determined that it should be a combination of surety bail in order for this guy to be released. Noronha is attempting to throw Governor McKee under the bus, saying this is McKee's fault because the prisons fall under his administration and he's ultimately responsible. Well, that's a good political talking point, and it's nice for Noronha to say, go ask McKee how this all happened. Now, McKee certainly is not involved in the day-to-day operations at the prison. The prison's saying it's not our fault because the sheriffs let him go. The sheriffs aren't saying anything, but it is true. Once surety bail is made, did the sheriffs know about the ICE hold? Was the ICE hold only made known to the ACI? we really don't know really all the details, and we haven't heard from the sheriff's department to the best of my knowledge. The Bureau of Prisons is being quiet for the moment, and I think that they're wise to keep quiet until they get their facts straight and get their talking points straight. But it's clearly an embarrassment that this guy somehow was put back on the street. And, you know, ICE, I think, properly puts out this news release saying, look at what happened here.
Yeah.
I mean, ICE is frustrated around the country with all of these sanctuary cities and sanctuary states not honoring their requests for detainers in many cases. ICE is trying to do the job and is being thwarted by state and local authorities. So I think there's enough blame to be assigned in many quarters at the moment until we get all of the facts out. And I think Rep. Dela Cruz is right to say there's got to be some sort of a hearing on this. How the hell did this happen? Will she get that hearing? I don't think she will. But I think it's a reasonable request because of the outrageousness of the whole travel of this case and how the facts have shaken out.
Folks, again, we're speaking with our legal expert, Attorney Tim Dodd. And Tim, I just want to also, one of the things that ICE and, or actually other reports have mentioned, how it was really in 2014 that then Governor Link Chafee announced that the state was no longer going to go along with essentially cooperating almost with ICE. Now, Raimondo didn't do anything about it. Under Governor McKee, he didn't do anything about it. But the part that I think people should recognize is that Rhode Island does act differently than, say, a state like Florida or Texas. Or, you know, Rhode Island and Massachusetts seem to be more in line with, there are some states that cooperate with ICE and other states like Rhode Island that it seems like Governor McKee, through executive order, could change that and say, all right, going forward, we're going to be fully, you know, cooperative with ICE.
Well, he could. In my view, he probably should. But politics being what they are, I'm not sure there'd be any appetite for a sitting governor to change the policy. But, you know, you raise a very valid point that this is something that Governor Chafee put into place, much to the consternation of ICE and federal authorities. I think as the influx of illegal entry into this country increases, I think around the country we're going to see more and more of this type of case where bad guys are somehow getting put back on the street by sanctuary cities and sanctuary states and ignoring ICE requests for a detainer. Maybe this will help to change the political attitude towards this issue. You know, back in 2014, this illegal entry problem was not as vast as it is right now.
Good point.
And it only
exactly.
seems to be getting worse.
Yep. Folks, quick break. Much more ahead on legal expert Attorney Tim Dodd right here on The John DePietro Show. The Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Lunch, dinner, drinks in the lounge, especially this time of year. So much going on. They always have a nice crowd right there. Full bar, large dining area right there in the lounge. Easy to get to, whether it's lunch or dinner. A great meal is waiting for you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery. Think of this, since 1994. That's right, celebrating the big anniversary this year. I'll see you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. We're speaking with our legal expert. It's Attorney Tim Dodd. Tim, our next story, confiscated marijuana was key evidence in a civil forfeiture trial. And then this is a story from the Providence Journal. And then they say, and then the police destroyed it. What is Tim Dodd's thoughts on this story?
Well, this guy, Richie, has been at odds with law enforcement for a considerable period of time. He said, I believe it's tax issues. There's been attempts made to confiscate real estate that he owns on Douglas Pike, and he's no shrinking violet. He's been more than happy to go to war with state and town authorities looking to assert his rights. He apparently was a licensed marijuana grower, and he was growing marijuana at his commercial or industrial building on Douglas Pike. Police claim, they claim to have had a confidential informant advising that this guy, Richie, was growing marijuana in excess of what he was legally entitled to do. Now, the cops get a search warrant. The warrant is presented to a judge with an affidavit. The affidavit references that the attesting officer has knowledge from his or her confidential informant that this activity is going on. So the linchpin of getting the search warrant is the claim by law enforcement that they've got a confidential informant giving this information. The warrant gets signed. The search warrant is executed. The plants are confiscated, all the marijuana plants. Allegedly that there was more than one kilogram being grown by this guy, which would create a felony. The cops contend that he had between 1 and 5 kilograms of marijuana under cultivation. This guy lawyers up. He denies the charges. And in the pretrial process, he says, my lawyers want to inspect the marijuana plants. We want to see the number that was confiscated, the weight of them, etc. The cops say, oh, sorry, we've destroyed all those plants. Defense counsel says, what are you talking about? You've destroyed evidence. How are we to determine whether the amount of marijuana by weight was above or below criminal standards? We've been denied our ability to put on our defense. They go further and they inquire of the cops about this confidential informant. And the cops who were involved in this investigation under oath then say that they never had personal discussions with the confidential informant. This case is so bad that Judge McElroy in federal court said on the record, there appears to be strong evidence that law enforcement lied or misrepresented about the confidential informant in this case in order to get that search warrant. So you got cops who even the judge is suspecting of lying to get a search warrant, lying that there was a confidential informant. And then the cops, either by design or error, destroyed evidence. Now, Richie would say, see, they're out to get me. They lie to get the warrant. They take my plants. They destroy them so I can't defend myself. They're just out to get me. Things don't look for law enforcement on this one, John, to say the least.
Folks, again, we're speaking with our legal expert. It's attorney Tim Dunn. Tim, we had talked about this potential arson case in North Providence where you have this temple and, you know, the police have seemingly have their suspect dead to rights, gas can. But then they also found some writings that he had done in his apartment. And the community had a big press conference on Friday. I'm just curious, update on the arson story and also the potential for hate crime to be enforced here.
Well, as we know, there was surveillance video that captured an individual splashing gas around and attempting to light this church on fire. The police, you know, the last case was bad representations of what cops do. This case is a good representation of what cops do. Apparently, the cops who are trying to get surveillance material, video from surrounding homes or businesses or ring doorbells or whatever the case might be, just like in the Boston Marathon case, they got those guys because they looked at surveillance video from all of the businesses near the area where the explosions occurred. One cop in particular had a hunch and went, I think it was to like a Cumberland Farms to look at their surveillance video. And lo and behold, there's this guy in there minutes before the video at the church, buying, I think, a Bic lighter, and he had filled up a gas tank with gas that he had purchased at this Cumberland Farms gas station. So he's not the most sophisticated criminal, because everything that he did to buy the arson materials are all captured on this surveillance video at the convenience store. So now the cops in look into this further, and they find evidence of extreme racist ideology. That's what they call it. And I guess this guy's got all sorts of stuff on his social media posts about, you know, killing all of a particular group of people, burning their churches, and the most hateful, vicious, horrible, reprehensible language that you can imagine. It does appear that the case is building, that this will be prosecuted, I would presume, as a federal hate crime. The U.S. Attorney's Office is looking at it. Right now, this guy's only been charged with malicious damage by fire, but I would expect those charges will be upped and additional charges would be added to include at least one degree of arson, and all of the hate crime components that go along with it. So I think this guy has videoed himself, or allowed himself to be videoed, into what would probably be a significant prison sentence if he takes us to trial or gets some sort of a plea bargain. I guess one of his defenses might be some mental health.
Definitely. Yeah.
I'm speculating, but
no,
I
no, and
that would be part of the package.
You should know. I interviewed the mother. The mother says that he's a musician, and what they were looking at, he was writing song lyrics. Is that possible?
Possible, but not probable.
All right, we'll revisit that. Tim Dodd, also, outrage grows over the TD Garden's strict new bag policy. This has caught a lot of people off guard.
Well, the Garden, all of these sports arenas and stadiums have a real problem in the potential for violence, for terrorism, for dangerous materials to be brought in surreptitiously. I mean, all of these places, Fenway Park, the Garden, I think Gillette, you can't bring in backpacks. You can't bring in handbags of a certain size. If you do, you've got to bring something in that's, I believe, clear. So it's either a clear, like, woman's clutch, if you will, or I think that you're allowed to bring in, like, a certain size of Ziploc bags. Again, have to be clear so that security can see what's going on. So the Garden has now instituted a new policy that if you're going to bring something in, it can't be bigger than 6 inches by 4 inches by 1.5 inches. So that would just about be big enough, I guess, to perhaps put in a cell phone and a credit card and your driver's license, and that's about it. The Garden is a private enterprise. They set the rules for admission. They set up metal detectors. They get to search your bag. They get to wand every individual going in there. No one is singled out. It's not that they're only doing this sort of search before admission to men or only to women. There's been some talk that this is only going to be seen as a tax on women because women are more likely to have a bag containing their personal effects of some sort.
Right.
But I don't think that's really a story that will sell in the long run, that this is a tax or an affront to women. I guess if you do go in there with an object or a bag that's larger than what's prescribed, you can, for a fee, I guess, put it in a locker or put it with security or something so you don't lose it. It's not thrown in the in a dumpster, but you can't bring it into the arena, and then you've got to pay for its safekeeping, and then you get it back, I guess, at the end of the night. which would be extremely cumbersome. I'm sure there'd be huge lines. It's going to be very frustrating for patrons. But this is a private facility. They set up their security policies. So based on what we know so far with this policy, can the garden get sued? Sure. Anyone can get sued for anything, but I don't think any litigation would be very successful. They've got a legitimate interest in making sure the place is secure and that contraband's not getting in. If contraband does get in, that's when they're going to get sued, because then there'll be allegations that their security procedures were not good enough or stringent enough. So it's like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. So people may not like this, but it's a sign of the times, and I expect that the policy will be enforced, and if legally challenged, the challenge would fail.
Folks, quick break. Much more ahead, our legal expert, attorney Tim Dodd, right here on the John DePietro Show. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvement, call them today for a free quote. You can also find them on Facebook, 401-323-9252. 323-9252, AJ, drywall, plasters, home improvement, frame to finish basements. What a difference it'll make in your basement. Acoustic ceilings. Look how beautiful your ceiling could be. New homes, additions. Also, commercial rehabs, painting, remodeling. Contact them today. It's a family-run business. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvements. Call for a free quote. What a difference they'll make in your home, your ceilings, floors, basements. 401-323-9252. What a difference. Beautiful walls and ceilings. 401-323-9252. You can also find them on Facebook. It's AJ Drywall, Plaster, and Home Improvements for your home or business. We're speaking with our legal expert and analyst. It's attorney Tim Dodd. Tim, our next story, I received email from people saying it's no one's business what type of pet this guy has. But in Central Falls, this guy had to surrender a pet alligator. I actually heard from some people saying, hey, if he has a bathtub, wants to take care of it, it's no one's business.
Well, that's a nice thought, but it's not the law. You know, we see these stories occasionally. Some idiot will want to have a pet boa constrictor, and the boa constrictor kills him one night. There was another story in another state where the guy got bit by his exotic pet and it killed him. There was a story in Texas recently. I think the guy had a pet boar, like a, you know, like the types of boars that killed the guy in one of those Hannibal Lecter movies. So this pet boar, after years of being kept, decided one night to kill the guy. So here we've got this alligator, or in Central Falls, an alligator, amongst many other types of animals, is considered in Rhode Island to be an exotic animal because it's not native to this area. There's a whole statutory scheme which identifies what constitutes an exotic animal. That law has been on the books since, I believe, 2010. So unless you've had your alligator in your bathtub prior to 2010, you're keeping such alligator, in most cases, illegally. So this alligator now bites somebody. The guy voluntarily gives it up. I don't know what became of the alligator, but I don't know. But no charges are going to be brought against this guy, to my understanding. But he clearly was, if he had this alligator prior to 2010, in conformity with the law, if he acquired this thing after 2010, he's been in violation of the law. And I think it's a story that's good for people to know, because lots of people seem to want to have exotic animals. We hear stories from time to time that somebody wants to have a pet lion in their bedroom, or a pet tiger, or all kinds of crazy exotics that are dangerous animals, which can kill you. So I think this is just a good review for citizens to realize that these animals are dangerous and in most cases illegal for you to keep in your home.
Folks, we're speaking with our legal analyst, attorney Tim Dodd. Tim, I wanted to give you a chance to weigh in on President Trump, the massive fraud penalty. I'm looking at Daily News. He owes $87,000 daily interest on historic fraud penalties. What are we to make of this huge judgment against President Trump?
Well, certainly, the Trump team complains about many aspects of this case. One of their biggest complaints is they didn't get a jury trial. Thus, this particular judge got to try the case sitting without a jury, and he seemed to have an animus and a bias against Trump from the get-go. I don't think the lack of a jury will be a winner for the Trump team on appeal, because my understanding is in New York, you had to make a specific designation or check a box or something at the beginning of the case, which his team failed to do. And I think they failed to request the jury trial, so I don't think that issue is preserved on appeal. I think there's lots of other fact issues that a review in court will take interest in. When a judge hears a case without a jury, reviewing courts typically give great deference to the fact-finding determinations by the trial judge. Reviewing courts don't like to say the judge got the facts wrong. So the judge in this case spent multiple pages on his fact-finding role. Because he was so meticulous about the fact-finding element of his decision, it's going to be difficult for a reviewing court to overturn this based upon the judge's factual conclusions. The real question will be whether or not there has been a misapplication of the law, or a misapplication of the law as it applies to these facts, or whether the judge's fact-finding was clearly wrong. The reviewing court can say the judge was clearly wrong in his fact-finding, but it's not normally done unless there's a gross abuse and misconstruing of the facts. Trump will appeal. I think he's got two cracks at it. He can go to the New York Appellate Court, then he goes to the New York Supreme Court. I'm not sure there's an issue here which would give rise to this case making its way to the Supreme Court. In the short term, there's a judgment, and Trump has to either post bond, which I think would be difficult to do for $350 million, or post assets sufficient to satisfy the judgment. So would he then have to just give over? Let's assume he says, I'll use Trump Tower. That's worth $350 million. He could pledge that. He wouldn't lose it. Letitia James would not take it over. But he would have to pledge sufficient assets so that if he loses on appeal, assets are pledged in the first instance and they can then be confiscated by the state of New York. If Trump doesn't pledge or post bond, the state of New York can get an execution for $350 million and start grabbing Trump assets. So he's got to post. He's got to post assets. He's never going to get a bond, in my view. And he's only got 30 days to get his ducks in a row. So he could post cash or real estate or a combination of both. But he's got to put up properties or money so that if he loses, there'll be assets that the state of New York can grab.
Folks,
it's going to be very difficult for him to do that in a short 30-day window. Excuse me, John.
That's all right. Folks, again, we speak with our legal expert, attorney Tim Dodd. Tim, former U.S. Rep. George Santos, he started this thing. It's called Cameo. You pay money and various people wish you a happy birthday or give a message, so forth. So the people at Jimmy Kimmel, they pay what he wants, and they have him do a bunch of messages, and then they play it on the show at night. Santos is now suing, going after late-night host Jimmy Kimmel, saying he deceived him into making these videos.
I don't think this litigation is going anywhere. I mean, he does this thing where for a fee, you know, you call, however you go
it's
about
on an
doing
app.
This.
Yeah.
It's an app. So you could call and say, Hi, Rep. I want you to sing happy birthday to my brother-in-law, Harry. And for a fee, he'll do it.
Right.
Now, you may not have a brother-in-law and his name might not be Harry, but for a fee, you're being asked to say certain words. So for a fee, this guy, Santos, said certain words in response to what was requested of him and for which he was compensated. Now, he's saying, I was defrauded because I didn't know that this was all for a joke. You misrepresented who you were. You misrepresented why this was happening. I don't think he's going to get far with this. I kind of hearken back to a couple of examples, like the Borat movie, where he was a totally phonied up who he was, where right. he was from, and he got these people to speak to him knowing they were on camera. They can't come after the fact and say you lied about who you were and you got us to say absurd, racist, horrible things. Or if you were, some of your viewers might recall the old Ali G show, which yes. was another Sacha Baron Cohen great show. He would get Andy Rooney. He would get Buzz Aldrin. He would get all sorts of internationally known people to sit down for these preposterous interviews, and they would answer ridiculous questions. But they knew they were being filmed. They knew they were being recorded. And none of those people, to my knowledge or memory, was ever able to successfully sue, saying, you defrauded me, you embarrassed me, you held me up to ridicule because I fell for what you were doing. And I think the same thing is going to be true with this guy, Santos. I don't think he's going to get anywhere.
Folks, we're going to leave it there. He is our legal expert, attorney Tim Dodd. Tim, excellent job as always, and we will talk to you again.
Thanks, John. Take care.
Do you need a good plumber? I found the best plumber, JMB Plumbing. Call them today. All your plumbing needs, 401-743-9153. JMB Plumbing. They've been providing plumbing services for years. Skilled professionals stand behind their work. Guarantee you will be happy. Maybe it's repairing damaged water pipes, repair clogged pipelines, maybe replace a water heater, as well as all your plumbing needs. Call them now. It's JMB Plumbing, 401-743-9153. Nothing throws off your life or your home or your business. When you need plumbing service, you need someone reliable, someone who's professional, someone who'll handle the job and do it right. It's JMB Plumbing. Call them today. 401-743-9153, JMB Plumbing, and look for them on Facebook. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. So Governor McKee and DOT Director Peter Alviti, they had a press briefing, and what they're going to do is they're going to add lanes to the Washington Bridge. So adding lanes, hope in cutting travel time. Now, they're going to go three lanes each side, but the lanes are going to be reduced right now. And this is, I think this is really important. Two of the travel lanes on each side will be reduced from 12 feet to 10 feet. That's very tight. And there's no room for error. Now, granted, the speed limit is going to be reduced, but I find this proposal very, very dangerous. So let alone in, rain, under normal conditions, whatever it may be. So let's pick it up. This is the latest, Channel 12. They feel they're going to reduce it to 40 miles per hour, but they're going to have more vehicles going on it.
Deadline for that in-depth analysis report. So it could be released any day now within the next few weeks. However, as Rideout waits on that report to figure out whether or not they'll have to tear down the Washington Bridge, they're focusing on ways to help alleviate this traffic.
It's been really crazy. It's kind of been a nightmare, honestly.
Sam Hackinson lives off the 195 detour route in East Providence. And though she says times to get to her home have gone back to normal, traffic on the bridge has not.
So I try to avoid the bridge as much as possible at this point.
Rideout hopes to alleviate that traffic by adding two new bypass lanes on both directions of 195. It's expected to increase capacity on the bridge by 50%.
We see this as a very positive step forward. Rite Aid will start working on these new lanes on Monday and does not expect any additional lane closures. All lanes will be narrowed down from 12 feet to 10 feet, except for a single 11-foot wide lane for trucks on the far right. The speed limit will also be reduced to 40 miles per hour, which Rite Aid hopes will prevent any wrecks that are known to cause traffic issues on 195. But if it does happen, Rite Aid says they'll have state troopers and tow trucks on standby 24/7.
They'll very quickly be moved off the highway into safe zones that we're creating to create an off-the-highway location to move those vehicles into and get them towed eventually from there, and for the state police to be able to conduct their questioning and anything else that goes on offline.
Drivers are hopeful the new traffic pattern will work, and the mayors of both Providence and East Providence agree.
And I can only see this helping the situation.
12 News reporter Alex Torres Perez joins us live from East Providence to tell us about the plan and what drivers are saying tonight. Alex?
Well, the fact of the matter is, let's see, how to be fair here. They realize they have to do something. And I guess the rationale, better to have more cars, more vehicles traveling at 40 miles per hour than the two lanes and then the people traveling a little bit faster. So, in theory, that should work. In theory, that, you know, the idea of that should work. The problem comes into how tight it's going to be, the slightest type of accident, whether it's nighttime, rain. Now, it's my understanding it's going to take 2 months to implement this. So it's going to take 2 months to even get these lanes set up this way. So that brings you really into the spring. And I mean, at this point, I think it's very obvious. They're not sure what to do. And having this backup just doesn't work. So more vehicles, three lanes, and everyone going 35 to 40 miles an hour. It's still a problem the moment you run into an accident. I find it's going to be very dicey. When you have roads set up that way, there's no room for error. And we know that that's just not how it works. I mean, there are accidents now when people have the 12-foot lane. Now suddenly it's going to be really tight. Now it's a short period, you know, it's not like it goes on endlessly for miles and miles. So it's a relatively short ride. And if traffic is light, then the people would have no problem. So all in all, I think it's certainly, you know, certainly worth the shot. The problem is how long it's going to take to try to implement this. And then they're going to have tow trucks waiting on scene. But anytime there's any type of accident, it's just going to be brutal. So I agree with the resident that they just try to avoid it. And that's not convenient. If you can avoid it, you avoid it. The good news is for so many people that don't have to go to that part of the state or deal with it, I mean, that's really the way you want to try to operate with that, because then otherwise it is it just becomes really problematic for those. There are some people that can't avoid it, that have to deal with it. So three lanes at 40 miles an hour instead of two lanes, more cars flowing through. It sounds tight. It sounds like there's going to be a lot of accidents. No room for error at all. They're going to try it. Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show. Propane Plus, call them today. Heating and cooling in Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359 for Propane Plus. Three generations you can always depend on Propane Plus for all your heating and cooling. Call them today, 401-885-4209. Three generations, they're available 24/7. for service and delivery, and they're going to serve you for a very long time. They have a great user-friendly website. You just log on at propaneplus.com, and then you type in your zip code, residential, commercial, Propane Plus, heating and cooling, always there for you. Give them a call today. In Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359. The Johnson family, three generations, heating and cooling. You can always depend on Propane Plus. It's My Health, 1099 Mendon Road in Cumberland, diagonally across from Davenport Restaurant. Stop in and see Marie, that historic white church. Shop local, inside, all quality products, vitamins, herbal remedies, trusted companies. They understand quality, integrity. It's My Health. It's all about your health. Local products, ICE, honey, maple syrup, beef fresh gum. You know, they carry over 250 bulk herbs, teas, and spices that can be purchased by the ounce, plus box herbs and teas, hemp and CBD products, and much more natural skincare products. Stop in and see Marie at It's My Health, 1099 Mendon Road in Cumberland. It's all about health for you, for your family. There's vitamins for children, all different types of teas, all different types of spices. Boy, what a difference it'll make. Shop local. Stop in and see the Queen of Health. It's Marie at It's My Health, 1099 Mendon Road in Cumberland, diagonally across from Davenport Restaurant, right in that historic white church. It's all about health. It's all about your health at It's My Health. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Well, I like the Channel 12, give them credit, have a story, not favorable terms. $132 million. For the Pawtucket Soccer Stadium causes sticker shock. It's just the beginning. There'll be change orders. This thing will certainly go well north of 150, closer to 200,000 before it's all done. So let's dip in with WPRI Channel 12, and they go inside the numbers with this ridiculous cost for the soccer stadium. Here we go. And we pick it up right here. Okay.
Years, right, Eli? And yeah. He's here now in studio. So, Eli, Rhode Island government agencies have officially closed on this bond deal. So the hefty price tag for taxpayers is getting some national attention now that we have the numbers.
Yeah, Ted, it's a lot. And to be clear, this is no longer a proposal. The deal is done. And some bond documents that we got are now revealing just how expensive the project has gotten. I want you to take a look at this chart. Rhode Island taxpayers are going to spend $132 million total on this bond for the stadium. That blue part at the bottom, that represents the $27 million that's actually going into construction of the stadium. Rhode Island taxpayers have to pay all that back to bondholders over 30 years, plus interest, financing, costs, and other administrative fees. It gets a little complicated, but in simple terms, Rhode Islanders are going to spend $132 million to fund $27 million of construction.
The numbers are just, I know you and I were both taken aback because we've covered various bond deals before. And just to help folks understand how unusual this is, take a look at this. The national headline on a national article last week from Bloomberg News, Rhode Island City draws eye-popping yield on municipal debt for new soccer arena. And the story goes on to say that local taxpayers are, quote, paying dearly for this project. Eli, you reported more than a year ago as well that the forecast showed the stadium isn't going to make nearly enough money in terms of new tax revenue to cover the cost of this bond.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what we're seeing with these bond documents also is that really the governor is prepared to go to lawmakers and ask for more money if there's a need. And that really flies in the face of what they've been saying for years, that they won't, you know, that taxpayers will not be on the hook for this.
Yeah, because we've been told that, you know, this is going to be covered by the stadium, the taxpayers won't be on the hook, and now we know a lot of money every year is going to be going into this. Let's take a look at one other piece of this deal, which is interesting, which is, well, how much is it going to cost to attend a game? So as you've been saying, you've been going through these bond documents, and if you look into it, they have kind of projected what they think the cost is going to be compared with some of the other prominent sports teams in our region.
Yeah, absolutely. The developer of the team has played it coy in terms of what it's going to cost to catch a game. But these bond documents, they did show a breakdown of those things. The grand reveal here is that a ticket's going to cost you $29.50 on average. And by comparison, you can see here that the PC's men's basketball game is $47, New England Revs $38, P. Bruin $30, and a Brown football game there at $25.
So it's going to be interesting to see what the attendance looks like once the stadium is finally built. Well, Eli has a lot more information on this project on WPRI.com. That's also where you can find my recap in the Niecy's Notes column from this past weekend. Eli, thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
Folks, again,
to have an idea
nice job by Channel 12 in doing that story. Now, just to be clear, they're going to be giving away tickets. No one's paying $30. I mean, so what, family of four? You're going to pay $120 to go see minor league? Well, you don't know any of the players. I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen. The unions, whoever, McKee, whatever. I don't know who's going to be behind it. Probably someone actually that wants to do business with the state. But no, they will give away block. The whole trick here, they'll give away blocks of tickets to just get the place and then try to make money off the concessions. They're going to be, and by the way, the business of P. Bruins, I mean, how many people are really actually even paying for P. Bruins tickets? They're constantly giving them away. I'm trying to be fair. I'm not knocking the P. Bruins. Is there a market for that? There is. I think when the P. Bruins first started, it's my understanding that the Friday night games, they used to draw 8,000 people. That's a lot of people. If you get 8,000 people to go to an event local, that's a lot of people. The last few times that I've gone to a P. Bruin game, it's far more in the vicinity of maybe 3,000. So them playing at the amp, isn't it the amp now or the Civic Center? It's way too big. You're not going to build them, their own. You're not going to build them their own arena. Hey, the Reds used to play at the old Rhode Island Auditorium. I remember going to some Reds games at the Civic Center. Not a lot, but I remember going to some. Now, the PC men's hockey team, and, you know, they play their games on campus, and they draw a good crowd, but they certainly would look empty if it was inside the dunk. But the idea that anyone is going to shell out $120 for four people to go see the minor league soccer team, this will reach the point that they can't even give the tickets away. They will be giving away blocks of tickets to youth groups. They just want to fill the stadium, get the experience. And let me say, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, or that's even a bad idea. That happens a lot of times. You have something new. The whole part of the equation, it would kind of work with the Paw Sox. Get them inside McCoy. Just get the bodies in there. Let them experience the game. Let them. You're going to make your money off the concessions, but you're not going to make anything if you're staring at a bunch of empty seats. So I would imagine the first year, the entire strategy is let's get schools, let's get as many people possible. Try to fill. That's a lot of people for minor league soccer. 10,000 people. That's a lot of people. So it may not sound like it, but the P. Bruins have been around for quite some time, and maybe they're drawing. They used to have the attendance numbers in the Providence Journal. I don't even know if they post that anymore, but it used to be around 3,200, 2,900, somewhere in there. And again, I'm not knocking it. That's like filling the P-Pack. So that's a good crowd, but there's no way there's no way 5,000 people are going to be paying to go to these soccer games. It's going to be they want to show crowd. They want to show, you know, families. They want to show people coming together. I also want to mention, I don't think it's the worst idea to go in that direction. It's different. The demographics of the state certainly are more favorable to watch soccer than to watch baseball. But the numbers on this stadium, just, they don't make sense. But the reason they don't make sense is that's not the reason it came together. It came together because Governor McKee had to fulfill a campaign promise. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. Check out DePietro.com, DePietro.com, all our links to social media, exclusive stories and videos waiting for you at DePietro.com. AEP Services, they take great pride installing fences of all kinds, vinyl, wood, aluminum, chain link, experience, quality, integrity. Call AEP Services today for a quality fence, home or business, 401-228-7190, 401-228-7190. Residential fence, commercial fence, steel, wood guard, rail, they have it all. Beautiful aluminum product, decorative landscape, it adds a lot to it for your stunning property. Call the experts today, AEP Services, 401-228-7190. Residential or commercial, why not enjoy your backyard, a little privacy, or maybe keep a pet or young children inside. Remember, they also have fences. They're resilient, water-resistant. Call today, 401-228-7190. Free quote, AEP Services, the fence experts, 401-228-7190. For all your tree needs, call Yankee Tree today. The tree trimming experts in Lincoln, call Yankee Tree at 401-439-6028. Whether it's tree removal, stump grinding, tree pruning, emergency service, bucket truck service, even bobcat service, you can depend on Yankee Tree. Remember, 24/7 emergency service is available. They are fully insured, licensed arborists, Yankee Tree. With all these storms, don't let some dangerous branches fall onto your home or business. Call Yankee Tree today, 401-439-6028. The tree trimming experts in Lincoln, you can depend on Yankee Tree Service. Call them, 401-439-6028. Free quote, 24/7 emergency service, Yankee Tree Service. There when you need them, 401-439-6028. Meal, a great time is waiting for you at the Cohasset Inn, Rhode Island tradition since 1977, 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick. They have a large dining room, perfect, maybe a group, maybe a collation, lunch. The Cohasset Inn, getting a big group together or maybe just you alone or a date. 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick, great staff, terrific food. They're always working on the menu. And they also have a nice lounge as well. You have the market at Cohasset right there. They're open 7 days a week. I'll see you for a great meal. Make it the Cohasset Inn. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Folks, I always tout our website just because it has exclusive stories and video. It has links to On the Scene live stream. Remember, there's no vowel I. It's DePietro.com, DePietro.com. You can also reach me that way if you'd like to get in touch with me. DePietro.com. Log on, and then links to Facebook and YouTube. Everything we have, it's all waiting for you right there at the website.